So returning client retention, circling back to that, that is should be pretty high, the 85%. Usually that just tells you that you are consistently providing a good service. You are creating good relationships with your clients. That's not hard to maintain. We are sitting with them for hours each month, and it's easy to keep that going once we've got that.
You're listening to Untamed, a podcast dedicated to empowering you, the lash artist, while providing insights on how to achieve success that is as individual and unique as you are. Each episode, me, Cheryl,
and me, Anne-Marie, share our best information openly, without reservation. We discuss challenges, best practices, and what the future holds for the lash industry.
So grab a snack and your comfiest sweater and get ready to geek out with your new lash BFFs. Oh, and don't forget to subscribe!
Hey, Lash friends, and welcome back to another episode of the Untamed Podcast. Today, we're going to be talking customer experience, really diving into how to get better client retention. And I brought on a special guest for this, someone who I really respect, have for a lot of years, and who I think is just a beautiful soul in our industry. Her name is Shelby. If you don't know Shelby, I'm going to let her introduce herself because this girl does it all. She has experience in education, running a successful salon, having a lash podcast, like so much wealth of information. So Shelby, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be on with you. Yes, I do kind of have my toes in a lot of different things. We were talking about before we were recording, like, how do we do, like, what do we announce or introduce? But so I have a lash salon in Austin, Texas, Pink Lady Lash. I have a lash podcast called Lash Boss Radio. I opened up a lash school where we license artists in Texas called Lash Boss University. And lastly, I have a pro shop, the Lash Boss Pro Shop, where we sell Untamed Artistry and other amazing brands there. And I also have a conference, the Lash Boss Conference, which might be getting a name change this year. So we'll see.
Wow.
Yeah, that's me.
I told you guys, she's done a little bit of it all. And not only has she done a little bit of it all, she's successful in each of it, which I think is really unique. So one thing that I remember, and this is a long time ago, I took a class and it was hosted at one of your salons at the time. And it was just so cute. And I thought, wow, she has so many stylists here. How does she really run this? Because it can be very tricky. So I'm really happy that you're like willing to share all your best information with our listeners.
Yeah.
I think that we get a lot of questions on it. People want to expand. They don't know where to start. They don't know what to do. And oftentimes, this might be a little controversial and not easy to hear for some of us, but we want to expand before we're ready. And I think that those are things we have to consider. So I'd really like to dive into what we need to assess like in ourselves as we're growing before we just like take that plunge and what we need to really be looking at. So with that said, when it comes to customer experience, like how do you feel like that can affect a business?
So much. If you have a lot of, say you spend a lot of money on ads, or if you make a post saying, like if you do a giveaway, or if you're just making lots of social media content and posts that are gaining attention to get new clients in, if those clients weren't, if their expectations weren't met, if they received less than what they thought they were going to receive, almost always that client won't come back. Whether they tell you or not kind of depends on their openness as a person and maybe just how comfortable they were made with you or the business. So what you're doing inside is actually more important, if not actually, I would say the most important thing. It's more important than getting new clients and having a ton of followers and a lot of engagement on your posts, actually. So you might find that you actually need a very small number of clients to be very financially stable in your company. But if you're feeling like you're constantly needing to get new clients in the door, something might be going wrong. So I would love in this episode to talk about how you can spot those trends and spot things that need a little bit of refining to avoid that situation.
Oh, absolutely. Because I definitely am a big believer that we have to pay attention to the clients we currently have and not only focus on getting new ones.
Yes.
That has been something that's always stood with me and probably why I had such good client retention. So how do we get good client retention?
So I think we have to think about what the client is experiencing and perceiving the whole time, not just their experience, but what are their thoughts about everything they're experiencing? So when they walk in the door, does it smell funny? Is there a lot going on? Is there a clear path to like where they go as soon as they walk in? Because a lot of people are in a place with a ton of rooms, and theirs might be in the very back, and their name is on a little map in the front, or there's no one sitting at the desk. Like maybe you just lost your receptionist. Maybe the receptionist is in the bathroom. So you have to think about that, even the first like waft of air that they get and the first like sight that they see when they walk in the door, all the way, all of the little things that happen in that detail until they leave. And you can even add stuff to their experience before and after. And that might look like a welcome email, and that could even get super enhanced by adding a video or picture introduction somehow, sending them some options for styles, or you can really just think about every single thing. How can I enhance my welcome emails and really sit with yourself and think about what those possibilities are? We can go on for hours about this. Same thing with the way that you touch base with them after the appointment. How easy was the checkout process? Were you sitting there for 5 whole minutes checking them out? Or was it super easy and smooth? And they're like, oh, that took 30 seconds. I can pre-book every time I come. Because if it takes 5 minutes, they don't have that time a lot of times. They plan for this amount of time and they're checking their phone. They got to go. They got to go pick up the kids. And so like, I just think of everything like that, in addition to obviously offering the absolute best lashes that you can possibly do. Both are important.
That's so true.
Yeah.
I like it. I like that you're thinking the client experience. When you look at your business from the client perspective, oh, it is humbling. Yeah. You start to notice all these things, even down to like where the client's sitting while they're waiting for you. What does that look like? What does it look like when they're sitting in your room, when they get up off the bed? Is it clean? Is it organized? What are they looking at? Just, are they pushed up against the wall, or they have something pretty, you know? Every little detail matters. So I actually want to ask you, from your experience of running a salon and working with so many different stylists, what are some of the most overlooked things that a stylist could do that maybe they're just not even thinking through to increase that client retention? Do you see the same thing over and over and over, or does it vary?
Yes. Something I always have to oil in our company is the organization of the rooms, because you're going back to back to back. And of course, we're sanitizing in between, but just having things clean as you go. So as you clean the client's lashes, put the bottle of cleanser back where it goes. Don't just leave it on the counter and leave the water on the counter, and then the iPad wrapper and your dental bib is here, but there's still stuff sitting around it, and there's little wrappers and all of this. If you just kind of attack that as you go, it's kind of like when you're cooking. There's some people that it's chaos when they're cooking and there's stuff everywhere, but some people while they're cooking, they are cleaning as they go. Mm-hmm. So if we can be that way, as you just mentioned, what they see when they sit up, I think that goes a long way, because even if they don't say like, oh, it's so clean in here, their brain is saying, I'm safe. Things are sanitary. This is a trusted person. I'm confident in them. Even that. So I think that's important. And then we add a ton of little knickknacks for hardly any money, but that elevate the experience so much. So in our bathrooms, we have complimentary, obviously, tampons and mouthwash and dry shampoo and lotion and lash wash. Of course, we do lash baths on our clients, but we have it in there too. And it just is, it doesn't cost a lot to maintain, but everyone thinks it's so amazing. We have little mints at the front, and people love our little mints in there and pink wrappers to be on brand. And so we just try and think of those little things, because we know that not everyone is doing that. And that just kind of sets you apart. And then also the way things smell, it smelling really good inside is something that just triggers a memory every time they walk in and smell it again.
I like that. And then I like the scent recognition. If they're just out and about and they have a similar scent somewhere, they're smelling like a candle, they think back to you. I think that's also really nice.
Yes, exactly.
I do remember your bathroom as you're saying that. because you had a lot of items in there for like clients to touch up so they can look their best when they leave, so that they don't leave with like flyaways, messy hair. You know, they're just feeling a little bit more refreshed. I really do appreciate those tiny details. Like as a stylist, as a client, we all love that. Even if it's never used, that's something that I notice is some of the stuff that I've had in my bathroom for my clients, they might not ever use, but they love having it. And if you remove it, all of a sudden they're like, where'd the hairspray go? And I'm like, oh, did you use it? No, but I liked it being there. Like, you know, yeah. It makes them feel safe and comfortable. And yeah. I like that.
I think the message is there that like, this place cares.
Yes.
Just because look at the little touches here and there. They just have a better relationship off the bat because they feel like they can trust that company to care about other things as well. If you go into a bathroom and it's like stark white and everything is just like super medical looking and all of that, and like that's not as inviting. Like there's no company like vibe. There's no like, not that there's words, but like there's no voice there. There's nothing speaking to you there. So I just think little touches end up saying so much, even though it's not costing too much. And it doesn't, you're not actively having to do anything. You kind of just set it, restock it.
I like that. I like that you mentioned that it shows the client you care. So with that said, if a client's not rebooking, how do you approach that? Like, how do you even pay attention to notice that the client didn't rebook? I think that that's a level of care that we accidentally may overlook as stylists.
Yes. So in our booking software, most booking softwares will have this where you can run a report on clients that haven't been back in a certain amount of time, and you can toggle it for different time frames. So you can actually calculate exactly which clients are due for an appointment this week, but aren't on the schedule. And I've used a lot of softwares for booking, and I think every single one of them had this. Some of them were easier to find than others. So you might need to play around with it or call like your customer service, but you could probably find it. And if you don't have it, maybe look at a different software because you should be using something that works for you in that way. It's important to know how many people aren't rebooking. And there was a time where a lot of it was lash lifts, not lash extensions, not rebooking. And I know it was because lash lifts were looking a little wonky after a few weeks. And that's something that's typically accepted in the industry when it doesn't have to be that way. We switch to a brand that the wonky phase is not existent. It's just healthy the entire time because of the process and the system. If you're curious about that, let me know. But that changed our client retention a lot and our client satisfaction. And pre-book, I know, is what you asked about. And that goes in with retention because a lot of times if they don't schedule before they leave, it's because they weren't fully satisfied. So, oh, let me check my schedule. Like, I'm not sure, I'll call. That's a little orange flag because if they were truly satisfied, they want to get on the books again with that person at their desired time. A lot of times they'll leave without something booked. They'll forget to book it. We can't get them in at the right time. They might look for somewhere that can fit them in, and then they may not come back. They may come back, but it's unlikely a lot of times. So with pre-book, that is directly correlated to their trust in us and their satisfaction. And so we need to consider that maybe the consultations aren't thorough enough. Maybe we didn't ask enough questions to be able to completely know what they really wanted. A lot of people will say like, oh, I don't know. Maybe just do whatever you think, but just keep asking. You can ask detailed questions about the style. And then if you can hit that consistently, you're not going to lose that person. But I do think a lot of things are connected. So their experience is connected to the pre-book, which is connected to the retention. When they're pre-booked, our retention is a lot better because obviously they are satisfied. And if we're not seeing appointments on our books in 2 weeks, we can kind of start assessing what is going on internally, fix that. And then anyone that is incoming from then on will then have a better experience and then be, you know, wanting to come back in. This also relates to productivity. So how full your books are. If we can look at our day today, say we have 5 clients today, in 2 weeks, hopefully 4 or 5 of those clients are rebooked for next time. And if we can do that strategically to make sure everything is flush as we're pre-booking, that only helps us get more clients in. Because if you wait till they book online or anything like that, then new clients aren't finding appointments because their clients are just allowed complete control of the schedule when they're booking online. Does that make sense?
Yes, totally makes sense to me.
Okay. Sorry if that was a long rant on those.
No, I like it. I like all the detail. This really shows how much care you put into creating a good experience for your customer. It's every little detail. And then you're also thinking about what's most like efficient for the stylist. And sometimes I find that stylists are not really working efficiently. They're letting the client kind of run everything. So it's like the client couldn't get in. Now all of a sudden we're lashing like 2 hours later than we wanted to go home. Now we're missing dinner. We're missing this. We're missing that.
Yeah.
It gets a little chaotic. So I like the system of pre-booking, making sure that everything's fitting in the schedule well. And that also helps with like boundary setting a bit.
Yeah. A lot of times we're scared to, we just want to book them whenever they're willing to come in with us.
Right.
Let's change that and think of it more as like, okay, when you're trying to book a doctor's appointment, they give you 2 options for the whole month probably. And you're just like, whatever you have, I'll take it. That's how we should see ourselves. So let's say we work Monday through Thursday and we get off at 5 on Monday, Wednesday, and 7 on Tuesday, Thursday. Say this person wants a 4 p.m. on Monday, because today is Monday. So they're looking at 2 weeks on a Monday, but that doesn't fit well in the books because my last client for that day actually is at 1 as of right now. So if you can't come at 2 o'clock, I'm not even offering you Monday. I could do 2 o'clock on Monday, 4 o'clock on Tuesday, 3 o'clock on Wednesday, or that is the options you have. We do not say I'm open from 1 to 5. Anytime works for me. Or you don't offer, we have a 2, 2:15, 2:30, 2:45. Don't offer that. We only offer flush appointments because then we have more room for full sets. And again, it's about our quality of time at work too, because then that translates into our personal lives. We're able to do hobbies and family time and whatever that looks like for you. But yeah, flush appointments is great. You get in, you get out. And that's not saying that you're not giving yourself enough time and appointments to do the service that you need to do. If you need buffer times in there, that's fine. I'm just saying we're not creating a chaotic schedule when we have complete control of that, really.
I think booking is an art. I really do. Understanding how to fit everything, making sure that you have enough time and not having those big gaps. I love the example you gave of, yeah, not saying that I have any time from 1 to 7 open, you know, saying the time that actually works and giving a couple options. Oftentimes, if there's too many options, it's too overwhelming for the client, I found in my experience. Now, I kind of want to ask you, so how do you balance that if you have a client reach out asking for a certain time, but you also offer online booking and your online booking system shows something conflicting to what you're saying?
I don't usually find that. It has happened before where people were like, oh, well, I did see a something, something. You can just be honest and say we try to accommodate as many clients as possible. So we try to make them flush if that's the only time you can do. I will say also the other benefit of having many artists is because we can say, well, so-and-so can do that time. That's very rare. I would say like 1% of the time that happens. But we also sometimes say somebody booked online and it doesn't fit in our schedule very well. You can always call and say, hey, we saw that you booked online. Thank you so much for booking. Would you actually be able to do 2:15 instead of 2:30? That's totally okay, in my opinion.
Yeah, I like that. I would do the same thing and just tell them like online booking's there for your convenience, but sometimes it fits a little weird on our end. So I like that. I think that sometimes we get in our head thinking through too many what if scenarios and we want to be prepared, but the reality is sometimes it's not going to happen. I know a lot of stylists either love online booking or hate it.
Yeah, I see the same thing. Some people say you shouldn't have online booking. Some people say you should. If you do have it, consider using it as like a tool to help assist, get people on the books, but also ultimately having the control at the end of the day to make it work for you too. Because some systems make it just a request versus an actual booking. You can also consider turning that on too.
I do like that. That's a really, really good point. And then if you're pre-booking all the clients before they leave, like they're probably not ever going to even look at your online booking.
That's true. Yeah. And the more clients you get pre-booked, the less of the chaotic possibilities happen because you're already like way ahead of that.
It was so funny when you're talking about this because I remember that my Fridays would always be the same clients like repeating. Like it was always the same pattern, always the same thing because I'd start trying to pre-book out more than just one appointment. Two, then it turned into like do 2 months, then do 4 months. You know, it was like trying to get a big chunk of time because it would work well for them. And yeah, I like that. I like that it's all like nice and tight. I know what to expect. I know who's coming in. And then that also helps us make a consistent income too, like a little bit more consistent versus it being all over the place. Now, you mentioned some reports that we can kind of like look at. You mentioned seeing when the client's not coming back, but you've mentioned a lot of other things that I know in at least the Vagaro Pro and many other booking softwares, there's so many reports we can use to our benefit. So could you tell us what metrics we need to look at? What do you feel like is really important as like a salon owner and then what's important as a solo artist? Are they similar? Are they different?
They're pretty similar. So productivity, how busy are you? If you are 90%+ booked, you really should raise your prices. We hear about raising prices all of the time. We don't hear as much of what you should be looking at before that, though. So if you are not sitting in 90% productivity, you probably have some room to grow. It could be skill-wise, but it also could just be customer experience, customer service. So another thing that can kind of tell you where you're sitting in those two things is the pre-book, as we mentioned, client retention, returning client retention, and first-time client retention. So are new clients coming in and having the experience that they thought they were going to have or exceeding that experience? If so, they're probably coming back. If they're not, they probably won't be coming back. And your new client retention will tell you that. It will tell you what percent of people that came in for the first time tried you a second time. Returning client retention is somebody that has been an established client, and them coming back in is more likely than the new ones. But we're wanting to see that number being 85%-ish. The reason why is we're accounting for 15% attrition, which is normal because of financial reasons, location, maybe they developed an allergy and don't want to continue. Lots of reasons. So we can expect that 15% of our clientele is going to drop off each month. If we're not consistently getting in a certain number of clients each month to replace them, then we might see our numbers start going down financially. So new client retention can tell you a lot about your consultations, your lash work, and just the customer service, especially just how comfortable they felt, if people were nice or bland. Are they wanting to try somewhere else out? I'll call you back. I'll look at my schedule. That's likely. I'm going to go search Instagram, see if there's anyone else that might be better than this. And I'll just get a fill somewhere else. I just need to find somebody that takes a foreign fill and I'm going to see what else is out there. That's what that means. So returning client retention, circling back to that, should be pretty high, the 85%. Usually that just tells you that you are consistently providing a good service. You are creating good relationships with your clients. That's not hard to maintain. We are sitting with them for hours each month, and it's easy to keep that going once we've got that. How many of your clients are purchasing retail, and are they just doing it once, or are they continuing to do it every few months, restocking their cleansers and stuff? Because that directly speaks to their trust in you as a professional. Would they rather just purchase off Amazon, or do they want to purchase from you? Are they cleaning their lashes at home? If they're not, why aren't they? Why do they not think that's important? You might not be as serious about it as you should be. So productivity, pre-book, retention of both returning and new, and then retail. Those are the biggest ones. If you have a salon, you can look at that as a whole, and then you can look at it individually and kind of see you probably need help on consultations. You probably need help on this. So yeah, but it all tells a story. And at the end of the day, the goal is that we maximize all of those numbers. And once we are in the 90% productivity range, whether we're solo or in a team, that just means we're ready to elevate a little bit, have higher prices, and that translates to more financial freedom, more freedom of time, lots of things. It looks different for everyone, but that's the goal.
Oh, I like this. This is great. I like that you're getting into the analytics of what we need to look at and then also saying that that's going to tell us where we need to focus or maybe where we're slacking a little bit. And I also wanted to just do like a little like side note for a second, but can you tell our listeners why it's important to retail products?
Yeah, I think it's important because your client should be maintaining their lash hygiene, the lash look. If their lashes look oily and greasy and crusty, your work doesn't look as good. It also arguably doesn't last as long. Some people don't believe that that has any bearing on retention. And I guess if you use enough adhesive, maybe it doesn't, but you still want fluffy, soft looking lashes because they're walking around with that. That is one reason. Another reason that benefits the artist is that it's income that's already, it's just sitting there waiting to be made. It's, you don't have to like go out and spend money to receive it. You don't have, there's no client acquisition cost to selling your clients the cleanser that they definitely need every 2 to 3 months. So that's my answer. What would your answer to that be?
So similar, so similar. I think it also shows that you're kind of an expert in what you do, because anything that anyone does that they're really good at in the beauty industry or in medical, like if we're thinking more like, you know, aesthetics, is there's aftercare to go with it. So if you're just doing the service, you're not telling someone how to maintain their hair extensions, how to get their cuticles to stay hydrated, you know, anything, you know, what do you do after lip filler, Botox? You're leaving so much empty. The client now has to go guess. And one thing that maybe you relate to, but definitely happened to me, is I would have so many clients come to me who were not my clients, but they would come to me for cleanser because my website said that I sold products and they said, I just don't know what to use. I can't figure it out. And then sometimes they ended up converting over to seeing me just because they were looking for something. They knew they needed to do something and they were just trying to Google looking for answers. It always blew my mind. I was always like, whoa, hi, like, this is great.
Yeah.
I think there's so much money to be made. And one thing that you mentioned is that they need to rebuy it every 2 to 3 months. I find a lot of stylists sell it the first time, then forget about it. And you have to stay on it because if it's been 2 months, I would usually check in with my client and say, hey, how much cleanser do you have left? Do you want to go ahead and pick up your fresh bottle today? And if they say, oh, it's pretty much full, I'm like, hold on a minute. Like, we got to keep your eyes like healthy, clean. Oh, we don't need to start having any issues, you know? So then you can like re-educate them, but staying on them is important. And then they know it's important. If you just say it's important once and then you never mention it again, they don't think it's important.
Yes. Before your clients come in, even at the beginning of your day, pull their product history. That way you know what you can follow up with on. We do this. Our desk does this for our whole team. So we have their little ticket and we know when they last bought their cleanser or their serum or whatever it might be. Because if you just keep repeating yourself, are you good on cleanser? What the heck is that? Of course. I'm just going to say yes. So, but if you're saying, I saw it's been a couple months since you last bought cleanser. You should be due for some right now. Again, that prompts exactly what you said. We talk about that at the salon so much. But actually, a confession, when I first started lashing, actually in beauty school, they taught us to mix distilled water and baby shampoo to clean lashes with, or to tell clients to clean their lashes with. And it's funny because I don't remember at the time there being lash cleansers on the market. This was like 2013. So 10 years ago, I don't remember that there was lash cleansers, not that I knew of at the time. Then there was this period, this era where there was more education and then products like lash cleansers started coming out. There was a ton of clients that we would see that had extensions before that are now needing to be totally re-educated on like, no, you're supposed to clean your lashes. I promise. No, I promise you're supposed to. They won't fall out. And then now we see most clients know that now, but it's funny to just see the journey of like, it wasn't always that way.
Oh, Shelby, this is actually something that I want to ask you because I think you're going to have really good advice on this. So when we learn and we grow and we realize that the knowledge that we were teaching our clients is different now, it could be that they don't need to wait 48, 24 hours to get them wet anymore. That could be something like that. It could be, hey, I know I was telling you to use baby shampoo, but I've learned that it's something different. How is the best way to go about telling this to a client? Because I find a lot of stylists, they don't want to go outside of that because they maybe it's like a little bit of like being scared. Maybe it's a little bit of that ego.
Yeah.
They don't ever want to like update their clients.
I think honesty is always the way to go. I laugh at myself of like things that I used to think. You probably can listen to the first year of my podcast and there are things that I would disagree with now, not about like cleaning the lashes. I've always said that on the show just because it came out in 2013 or 2018, gosh. But I remember going through that period of, well, gosh, all my clients are cleaning with baby shampoo. So now I got to tell them they need this instead. And so just saying like, hey, this research has come out, or hey, we've learned that people are having better results with this. It's actually formulated for the eye area and for lash extensions. And that can look different. We've actually realized that retention has gotten even better if you're just cleaning your lashes. You can even start cleaning them directly after the service and telling your client that as a positive thing, not like you don't have to make yourself sound like a terrible person for not knowing, you know, that adhesive is cured super fast and that you don't need a day or two, because that day or two turns to 3 or 4 or 5 days because they think that it helps.
Exactly.
So the sooner we can start, look, like the way that you got reeducated as an artist, someone had to tell that to you and they said it in a way that changed your mind. We could do that for our artists and it's totally fine. Nothing bad happens, only good.
I love that. I love the positive of, hey, we found that this works better, and getting excited about it for, like, if you're excited about it, your clients will be excited about it. That's awesome, awesome advice. Thank you. Now, I do want to circle back to something that you mentioned that I know some of the listeners are probably like, guys, is raising prices, because raising our prices is something that's so important to us. And you told us a little bit about the metrics of knowing like when it's time, but is there kind of anything that you see happen that goes wrong with raising prices or things that stylists aren't considering? So obviously if they're not hitting these metrics, but I'd really like your honest opinion on that. And also kind of taking your experience from having so many stylists work with you, because I'm sure you've probably had at one point or another a stylist who thought they were ready to raise their prices, but maybe they weren't.
Yeah. The thing that I think is most common is they're not raised high enough. So only raising $5 isn't really going to drop off any clients. And I think that's the goal for some people. It's like, I don't want to lose any clients, when the goal is actually to lose a little bit of clients because we want to open up our books for higher paying clients and offload some of the time that we're spending lashing and maybe make the same amount of money with doing less work, because it's really about that. Like, this is our livelihood. I just believe that you should be kind of expecting to lose a few. So that's what I see done most wrong. I think what happens when you have a team is they're at different levels. And so you might have different pricing tiers. We at one time had 3 different pricing tiers, and then we had 3 different kinds of full sets, and then all of the different kinds of fills. And that is a lot. And so the goal has been to narrow that down to 1 pricing tier. And so creating a team that you're not hiring at a certain level when you get to a certain level. There's steps to this, but we have elevated our experience so much. The artists are there for a very long time. Like, most of the people that work at Pink Lady have been there for several years.
Nice.
So we don't really need to hire someone right out of beauty school, unless, of course, they went to Lash Boss University, they got the right training, because it was literally us teaching it. But the goal is to have them come in at this price range, not tier at all. But yes, that journey looked so different year by year because of the different people in there, their experience, and this person needs training on this. And it's a challenge to have a team because you're met with so many different variables. And then you're having to really pay attention to that person's individual metrics because of the story that those will tell. And that will tell you, is that person ready to go here? What should we be training them more on? Is it skill or customer service? So when you're not paying attention to the reports, there's a lot of reasons people don't do that. Even as a solo artist, they might be scared to find what they're going to pull up. Like, they just, I don't want to see that. Like, that might be it, some type of fear. or they feel like they don't have time to do the admin stuff. Those are two things I usually see. That is also screaming something at you too, because you should have, if you're a business owner, even if you work for yourself, you should have that time. And if you don't, maybe it's time to raise your prices and we're back at square. So yeah, I feel like there's like a clear defined like order of everything. It's internally polish everything and always relook at it. Pull these metrics. What can you change? Get yourself to 90% productivity based off of everything that you're learning and enhancing, and then raise your prices. And then if you would like to maybe hire someone, don't do that unless you have the time to train them and for you to stay on top of those things for them too. And I think that's how you do it.
I like it. It's really interesting to actually hear like the progression of you getting to the point of everyone just being at the same price point.
Yeah.
That's so unique. I really haven't heard many business owners ever talk about something like that. They might have broken it down to two different levels, but to have everyone at one is really impressive, especially because you're not a team of two.
Yeah. We've got 10 artists.
Right.
Two of them are still in the lower tier. So we're almost there. We're once they're there, we're done with that tier and we just have one. So that's been the goal for a while and we're so close.
That's really, really neat. I'm excited to hear how that goes. It seems like it's going to be amazing. It makes sense. And I understand the struggles of having a lot of different tiers too. So, and sure. Oftentimes it's like, oh, we want to bring on another artist. We're trying to bring on someone who is like newer. And like you mentioned, like investing back into them to build their skill and having that lower price point, sometimes kind of nice. But one struggle that I've heard over and over again from stylists is I'm hiring someone new, but I can't convince my clients to see them. But I need some of my clients to go see this stylist so that I have more free time to do whatever it is that they're exploring. And I think that that's probably part of the problem.
So step one to that, raise your own prices, knock a few clients off, use that one block of time, whether it's 4 hours or a full day, that is your time that you're training that person. And then that grows and it grows. And one thing that I want to say, I would really like to say that a lot of times we have all these goals and dreams and things that we feel like we need to be doing when we kind of like that. It's great to big picture plan, but it's crazy that we stress ourselves out about the process so much when we just need to do the next step. So don't worry about that yet if you can't even think about what time you're going to do that in, because you won't raise your prices. So you don't even need to do that yet because you can't. So that there's things that come first that when they're done, the next step is easier. If I look at 10 steps ahead, it's a lot more daunting than just the very next thing that I've been putting off and I know I need to do. We'll just do that thing. And then the next door opens and then the next door opens. And I think that's how all of the things have come about, the podcast, the school, whatever it is. At one point, maybe years prior, it was this huge idea that I had. And I used to just like marinate on it all and drive myself insane. But then when I'm like, I'm going to do these couple of things today, I look back after a year and I'm like, dang, look at that road, that there was a lot in there that what was I stressing out about? Yeah, I don't know. So
I like that.
Yeah. I think that that's something I was super guilty of and I don't like to see people do the same.
Right. It's so true. Now, what's interesting about it is there's so much mixed advice out there on how to go about the journey. And it does look different for everyone. So it's like, you know, going from one step to the next to the next. One thing that I'm taking away strongly from this episode is just making sure that you're ready to, that it's like the right time for you, and also making sure that it's something you want to do. Not that you're feeling like you have to, because I think that that happens. We're always pushed that we need to do more and more and more and more and more, but you can have a happy career as just a single solo lash artist, as long as you're looking at your metrics, still raising your prices because you deserve it. I think that's great, because I think people start bringing someone on and they didn't really want to, and that can also be financially draining if you're not ready to and you're not thinking through that.
Yes, the amount of lessons I've learned hiring people when I wasn't in a position to do that, even whenever we had like several stylists and I wasn't even behind the chair anymore, hiring another person when someone else is still in training is always a risky place to be. And yeah, I think there's just always little signs when things start to feel defensive. Or I said this in another podcast, but it wasn't a lash podcast. So I don't think anyone's heard this yet. Some indicator that you need to rethink some things and sit with your thoughts is if you start feeling defensive when people start asking you like, well, have you thought about this? Or what do you think about? Like if anybody expresses any doubt to you and you get defensive about it, that's a red flag. Because that's your body telling you literally that person is on to something, and you need to look at that and sit with that too. Because the defensiveness could be from something else, but a lot of times it's because you do need to sit with that thought a little bit. And so for me personally, I opened up a second location, ended up closing it later. I had it open for 3 years. The entire 3 years was stressful. I opened the second location a lot because of I thought that I should do that next. And there was a lot learned in that time, so I'm grateful for it. But so many of us open a salon not really needing to do that in our lives. And a lot of times you make less money as you start hiring more people. So all things to consider. Yeah, I love talking about this stuff. So thank you so much for all of this. It was a really good conversation.
Yeah, I really appreciate you sharing so openly. I think that there's so much I could talk to you about forever. Because this is just scratching the surface, but there are so many good takeaways, I feel like, from this episode. I hope everyone is getting ready to look at their metrics, really diving into what it is that they're wanting and staying true to them. So Shelby, to wrap up today, I was actually curious for you to share kind of what's been on your mind in the lash industry lately. Like, what you thinking about?
I feel like mostly just wanting people to achieve success in a non-stressful way to accomplish their goals while still honoring where they've been and what they have already accomplished and not being so hard on themselves that they're not there yet. Enjoying all of the different parts of the process and looking at things like not necessarily like a game, but just like a fun little, like it's so fun. And I say this at the beginning of when we have a new class at the school, I always say, okay, everybody, you're about to work on your mannequins for the first time. Take a second and just take it all in, because this is going to be one of the best journeys that you've taken. And it's important. We're all just like chugging along. We all want to be successful. We all want to accomplish these huge goals, and you can, but it doesn't have to be stressful. You don't have to drive yourself crazy doing it. So that's why I think just breaking it all down to like, what's something I can do today that kind of helps me out tomorrow? And then it's just like you're doing these little steps. And then after a year, like I said earlier, you'll look back and like, wow, I've come so far. Stress is not necessary. Sometimes it happens like because of situations out of our control, but we don't need to inflict stress on ourselves just because we like have big dreams.
That's all for this episode of Untamed. Thank you so much for joining us today. You can see the show notes and all of the resources mentioned in today's episode at untamedartistry.com. Don't forget to subscribe. And remember, as your study buddy, we are always here for you. Don't hesitate to send us a DM at untamed.artistry.